Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and today we're talking with a very interesting guy. I got a message from him a couple of months ago that he was giving a talk on the history of internet marketing, and he wanted to see if I could share some information with him about that. And we've been playing phone tag ever since, but finally we got on the phone and had a chance to talk, and I'm really glad that we did because he's a really interesting person that's done a lot of things that are going to be useful to all of us. He's developed insights and methodologies that are definitely beyond average. And so I wanted to use this call just to introduce you to him. I'm sure you're going to be hearing from him a lot in the future. And his name is Ryan Gary. Ryan, are you there?
I sure am. Thank you, Ken.
Great. Well, Ryan, you have an amazing background, and we're not going to be able to cover all of it in this call. We're going to just scratch the surface. We're certainly not going to be able to cover all the things that you're working on. But what I want to do on this call is introduce people first to your background, and then maybe we'll talk about some of the things you're working on.
Okay.
So you had this really interesting experience in a bookstore.
Yeah. It was actually my very first job at Walden Books, of all places. The mall bookstore back in the day when people used to shop at malls. And
back in the day when there was a Walden bookstore.
When there was a Walden bookstore. It was my very first job, and I take that back. I did have I had a brief stint at a Hardee's fast food, and then at Little Caesars, and I realized that this just is not for me. And so I wanted something that was at least going to challenge me a little bit more. And so as I often do, I was just walking. I was walking through, and I was walking through the mall, and I saw a bookstore. I'm like, okay, this could work actually. So I go in and I interview, and believe it or not, the guy who interviews me, he was very big into of all things Dungeons and Dragons, and I read a lot of those books actually, and so we hit it off, and somehow I was able to get the job, even though they weren't really hiring at the moment. I was able to finagle my way into a position about 3 months into the fiscal quarter I started in. And despite that, what was interesting is despite that 3 month handicap, I was there for 9 months of the fiscal quarter. And despite that, at the end of that year, we had a little meeting in the back room, and they had announced and let me know that I was in the top three in the entire company for selling their little preferred reader's cards, their little plastic cards for helping you save money on reading your books, on buying your books. And so I was in the top three in the entire company for that. And I had an average, some odd, I think it was like $1.20 higher average ring up than anyone else in the district. And I remember sitting around the group, and he's telling me this, and he's just kind of reading it from the manager's reading it from a piece of paper as though it's just kind of like another little tidbit of news. I'm sitting here scratching at him like, is this kind of a big deal? Isn't this kind of worth something? Like, can I get a raise or something? I mentioned that, and he says, let me see what I can do. And my review is coming up in a little bit, and so he pushed my review ahead. That was part of the favor, and then I got a whopping 25 cent an hour raise, so I think that bumped me up to $4.78 an hour back then.
Wow! Well, welcome to corporate America. that is just amazing. Now, I don't think Walden is in business anymore, is it? I don't even remember. Don't even know.
I don't even know either, to be honest.
Because I know in the mall that I go to, it's gone, and clearly Barnes and Noble and Borders have become the big gorillas in that market. But there was a time, there was definitely a time when Walden Books was the mall bookstore. It was all over the place. And this is amazing. So of all the hundreds, maybe thousands of employees they had, I imagine it would have been thousands.
Oh, they were nationwide. Right? They were a nationwide chain. They're a vast nationwide chain. And they were, not only were they owned in, they had another larger outside of the mall chain that were owned by a different corporation as well. But yeah, it was a very large chain. And so at the time I remember thinking like, this is kind of a big deal because there's thousands of people. There's thousands of people that are competing for this. And the funny thing is, looking back, What's that?
Yeah, so you walked in off the street, kind of, I guess, wet behind the ears, young guy. No sales experience, really, no business experience, and with a 3-month handicap, you were the number three seller for the whole chain. I mean, it's amazing. So I guess everybody can see why I've got Ryan on this call. I mean, if that was all he ever did, it would be worth talking with him about how the heck he did that. But there's a whole lot more to talk about. But yeah, go on. I interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's funny. I was just going to say, the funny thing out of all this, the funny thing is I don't even remember it really considering it a sales job. That's the funny thing about it. Like, it was only when he tells me that I was realizing, like, so you guys are keeping track of this? So, like, this is the big deal. Like, until then, I didn't even really consider it a sales position. And I didn't even know that they were tracking our average ring-ups or anything like that. And the funny thing is I was actually a second key assistant manager in the store. At this point, so I was proud of that. I was proud that I was assistant manager of a bookstore, and I'm 16 years old. I thought that was pretty cool into itself, but I didn't even recognize it as a sales position, but yet that's what it was, and that's what obviously a lot of what they were doing, and obviously I performed very well in that. And so that's what when that kicked in, I realized, I'm like, well, heck, maybe the sales thing is something I should be looking into. Maybe I should be looking into doing this.
Were you even at 16? Were you even aware of that sales was even a possibility as a job for you?
To be honest, I wasn't. I didn't even know. That's when it first kicked in. That I'm like, oh wow, maybe selling is something I can do. And then I was talking with my buddy about it, and he was working at a telemarketing place. He's like, well, you should come work with us then. And so I actually went to work for a telemarketing company, and we were doing. This is actually a fun experience because they changed what we did on a sometimes daily basis. Sometimes we'd have a week-long gig. Sometimes we'd have a month-long gig. So I did everything from radio surveys, surveying people on radio stations, to getting people to refinance their mortgage, to selling trash bags, to selling light bulbs, to car, to auto insurance, to you name it. Like, they would literally just load up a script and off we would go. And that was actually kind of a blast for me. I really, really enjoyed that, just because of the variety. And I was able to, and that's where I learned to, on the fly, just give me a script. I can read it, and I can go through it. And I can still make it enthusiastically passionate. I can still go through it and have fun with it. That was the biggest thing. And that's what I realized looking back upon my quote unquote sales experience at that point in my life. I realized, like, what's making me different? And then I had a hard time kind of finding out, like, why am I good? Why am I this? Because that's one of the dominant questions in my life has always been how and why. Why and how? And so I was asking, like, why am I having this effect? And it wasn't until years later on that I realized that it really comes down to just a genuine curiosity. It really comes down to a genuine curiosity for other people, circumstances, events. And when I put a product in front of me, and put a prospect in front of me, I'm going to be curious how those two line up, and if they do at all. And if they don't, I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on as quick as I possibly can.
Wow. I mean, it sounds so simple, and yet I wonder how many people who are trying to sell neglect that very fundamental thing. So you have a natural curiosity, but I'm a believer that curiosity is like a muscle. And because if you look at a child, I think, you've got children, I've got nephews, everybody's, got hopefully some interaction with kids. And boy, they are curiosity machines. Nobody has to tell them how to be curious or get them interested in the world. I mean, they're just so I think that we all have that inborn very strongly. In fact, it may be probably curiosity and caution are probably the two things we're born with. One to get us out into the world and one to make sure that we don't fall off the cliff. And those are probably our two most dominant forces in us. And so if somebody's not got that curiosity engine running, it's possible that it was shut down, that things happened and they shut themselves down. So I believe everybody can revive that curiosity engine, and they can do it in the same way that one exercise. You think so too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You saying that reminded me of that old quote, from Vincent Van Gogh. Someone said, "Wow, you're a real natural at this." Maybe it's Picasso. They said someone said when he was painting, they said, "Wow, you're a real natural at this." He said, "I wish I could paint like that," or something to that extent. And he says, "You know, we're all born painters. You know, some of us choose to forget, or some of us forget over time." And when I heard that, I thought, "Wow, all of us are born salesmen. Some of us just forget." If you want to sell something, send a kid. If you want to sell, they're not worrying about the value proposition. They're not worrying about the price point to profit ratios. They're not worrying about overcoming objections. They're just gonna do it in that moment. They're real. They're alive. They don't have to worry about it the way that we do. And so, but no, you're absolutely right that we can get that curiosity back, and that's actually a big part of my mission. It really is coming back down to a point of creating a designer mind, of designing your mind and designing your life how you want to be. If you want something inside your mind, no one's going to give it to you. The question is are you going to take the power to actually put that into your life and find a way to make that part of your reality moving forward?
Gotcha. And so, you know, if somebody's in business and if sales is an important part of their business, and I can't imagine a business where sales isn't important. One of the powers that you want to put back in or reclaim is this power of curiosity, which is, you know, curiosity is very different from I want it to be this way, the way a lot of salespeople approach things. I got to close this guy, you know, I got to, you know, get him to do what I want.
No, even right there, you just said it, because you said, you know, how do I close this guy? The thing with curiosity, we all know, anybody who's been in sales for any length of time knows that you don't start with closed-ended questions, and you don't use only closed-ended questions. You use open-ended questions, and then you use closed-ended questions to validate, to confirm, and such. And much in that same way, curiosity is an open loop. It is an open question. It's not a closed question. Curiosity is an open question. And it's one of those things that, just like in business, I'm glad you brought this up, because in business, curiosity can do many things for us in our business life and in our sales life. But also think about what it can do for our personal life too, because when you look at relationships, you know, I've been married to my wife, and I know I'm going to open up a Pandora's box here by saying this. We might have to cover it at a different time, but I married my wife a week after we met, and I actually got her to propose to me first. We've been married for almost 8 years now, and I can honestly say that I love this woman more today than the day that I met her. And I know that's absolutely mutual, and one of the secrets to our relationship is that we stay curious. We stay curious about each other. We haven't moved past that honeymoon phase because we're still curious about each other. We're still finding out about each other because we're still finding out about ourselves. We're still dedicated to uncovering who we really are. And as such, it's like we're constantly both like in this eternal progression towards uncovering our better selves. And as such, and as we do so, why would there be any lack of curiosity? Why would I assume I know this woman who I've been with for, you know, coming up on 8 years now, or for people who've been married for 20 or 30? How do you, what gives you the ability to assume that you actually know that person right here, right now? So bringing curiosity back into your life will dramatically change. And in the people I've coached, and this has been an area that we focused on, it really is one of those things that because people talk a lot about gratitude. People talk a lot about these things. But gratitude, what's interesting is gratitude is actually what I found is a second tier, if not a tertiary effect of curiosity. Because when you're curious and you seek to understand, then you do understand. Gratitude is a natural result of understanding at a deeper level. And you won't get to that understanding at a deeper level unless you're curious to even find out in the first place. Otherwise, you're walking around as a perpetually closed-ended question. Yes or no, yes or no, yes or no, black or white. But unless you remain open, like an open-ended question, where now you can discover and find new things out, that leads to new understanding, and that leads to gratitude.
Wow. Wow, I don't think I've ever heard anybody put it that way, and it makes perfect sense. And we just had Thanksgiving recently. And it's a day that always, it's a day that always makes me think about talking about, the power of curiosity, but the power of gratitude, amazing power too. And the idea that curiosity is a natural gateway to gratitude. That's really something. So how, we can see how this applies in your marriage. Obviously, a relationship between any people would be better if instead of having fixed ideas that get stuck and rigid and locked in some, limited terrain, it's obviously better to be continually curious, because we're all complex people and we're all undergoing change all the time. Nobody's the same from one year to the next. Hopefully, we're always growing, changing, developing new interests. So I can see how this would work in a personal relationship, but what about a business relationship? Because so much of the way business is presented is in sort of mechanistic terms, here's the process, here's the do this, do that, and then do this, and then next. How can we apply this approach to our businesses?
How can you apply curiosity to your business? Well, first off, just in the question, you already started the process. Just by very asking that question alone, you're starting the process. A great way of starting with curiosity, a great way of finding curiosity is first just simply setting an expectation in your mind foundationally, because remember, expectations are what will determine how we see the results and how we move forward in a lot of things. And so if you set an expectation that perhaps you don't know everything you could know. If you set an expectation inside your own mind that perhaps my business partner knows more than I think he does, perhaps, there's some unhidden taps. Perhaps there really are some unhidden taps areas of finances in here. Perhaps the processes that I wrote 6 months ago, even though they were good at the moment, perhaps they're not the right workflows. Perhaps they're not the right, this isn't the right marketing campaign for us anymore. So just starting with a foundation of uncertainty, believe it or not, and this can be kind of, this is where curiosity, I think, gets lost in our later adult lives, because curiosity is a result of functional uncertainty. But uncertainty is something that most of us typically tend to run from. We don't like uncertainty. As we grow up, as a child, uncertainty is all we know. It's what we're comfortable with. But as we grow, as we go through life, certainty becomes a much more prevalent part of the picture. We need to know who we are, so to speak. We need to find our identity. This is my business. This is my mission. This is my purpose statement. This is my company. All those certainties lock us into something. And so the first and foremost fundamental thing that you can do is remove that rock bed of certainty and just be open to the concept that perhaps, just perhaps, there's more to the picture here, and perhaps you could have been wrong about something, or perhaps you were right about it then, but now things have changed. Even if it's a day later, things have changed enough that it's not the right thing anymore. So starting with that rock bed of what I call functional uncertainty is the place to go. You don't have to be uncertain for uncertainty's sake, but you be uncertain to the point to where your mind will automatically go to work asking new, more powerful questions for you without you even really having to do much of the work on your own. You just have to set the expectation that perhaps there's more uncertainty here than there is certainty, and that's okay, because you will find out. You will get back to a place of a higher certainty.
So it's kind of something, obviously you can't go through the entire day uncertain about everything. You'd have trouble getting out of bed. But it's kind of something that you consciously could, and I'm asking a question because I'm not sure what the answer is, that it's something that you could consciously, deliberately turn on. Okay, so, for instance, if you're doing your bookkeeping, or you're taking care of some, maintenance task on your business, you kind of just want to get through that. I mean, maybe that you could ask the question, is there a better way to do it, of course. But there are certain things where you're kind of on autopilot, you just need to get to the next piece. But then there are certain junctures where that's where you want to turn it on. You want to open your mind and go, okay, this is good, but are we doing everything we can do here? Is there something else we could be doing? And so is that an approach that you endorse? In other words, deliberately turning it on for
no, that, you know, you're exactly right. That's why I call it functional uncertainty, not only because it's functional in purpose, but because it serves a specific function. What is the function and where uncertainty might yield a better result than an assumption? Where is that appropriate? And determining that, you know, whenever you are at that moment, and the most important thing here, the reason why, you know, so first it's designing what's the function. So just like you're saying, so you're not going to wake up and just go about your whole life going, oh my gosh, I don't even know who I am anymore. I don't want to start any psychosis or identity crises out there. I'm not in the business of creating business. I know I help people through that. I know I coach people through that stuff, but I'm not in the business of trying to drudge up business. So it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of just that you're finding a specific function, a sales process. You're having challenges with a business partner. You're having challenges closing a deal. Well, in that moment when you're trying to close this person and you're raising up objections and they keep coming back with objections, well, here's an example of functional uncertainty. The function is that you're trying to get to a true answer, because let's face it, how many times do we have somebody that we're trying to sell and they keep coming up with objections, and you answer this objection, and then boom, there's another one, and boom, there's another one. And you think, my gosh, does this guy have an endless supply of objections? Like, what is going on here? And what's really going on is, yes, he does have an endless supply of objections, because people have an endless ability to be able to try to come up with creative ways of getting out of a situation. When it comes to creativity, we excel at creativity when it comes time to trying to get out of a conversation or trying to tell somebody no without actually telling them no. So in this function of trying to close that loop, you know, perhaps you can sit back and say, well, perhaps I should be a little more uncertain of the fact that maybe I don't know all of the picture here. And so, you know, one of the things that I've done as a sales rep to be able to do that is to, I'm giving away a lot of meat here. I don't know if I want to get, I'm giving away a lot of meat here, but this is very important. It's a process that I call the suppose close. And so what you would do is, and this came out as a born out of functional uncertainty, of just because somebody gives you an objection, they say, well, what about this? Can you assume that that's going to be the only real objection? In a certain world, yes, it probably would be, because that's the only question they're asking, right? So of course, yep, you're going to want to answer that question. But in a functionally uncertain environment, mentally, as a mindset in that particular moment, you would say, well, what else is there then? Because chances are this probably isn't the only one. So you can, in that moment, a person gives you an objection, you can say, great, what else is there? Great, what other questions do you have? Don't stop to answer the first question. Get all their questions out. And then when it comes time to closing them, you know, then you can come back and say, you know, Ken, suppose price wasn't an issue. Suppose price wasn't an issue and I can make this affordable for you. Is there anything else that would stop you from being able to pull the trigger right here, right now, so we can both walk away from this moment knowing that we made a good decision? Is there anything else? And if they say no, then you can go to work attacking that particular thing. And then if they come up with objections after that, it could be because perhaps you raised more questions in their mind. So they could come up with more authentically, come up with more objections after that because you raised questions in their mind. But you'll know the difference. You'll be able to spot, okay, there's something really deeper going on here. He doesn't want to buy. There's something that they haven't told me. Well, guess what? Perhaps in a functional uncertain environment in that particular moment, you would realize that perhaps you haven't gained the level of trust or respect needed for them to really open up and tell you what's really going on.
Got it. As I listen to you talk about this, it's you're not fleeing from objections. In other words, a lot of people, when they approach the sales situation or any situation, whether business or not business, you kind of have an agenda and you want it to be, you know, carried out. And if something goes wrong, i.e. an objection, it's like, oh no, you know, and so you're kind of trying to avoid any kind of objections. In your case, you're seeking objections out. You're trying to dig them out up front, which would be the attitude of somebody who's approaching a situation from the point of view of curiosity, an agenda, and I'm going to freak out if it doesn't go the way I want it.
Why would it be any other way? The only reason why would it be any other way is if you're not operating from a sound point. Unless if someone throws you an objection and you're looking, you have an objection sheet and you're like, that one's not on the list. I don't know exactly what to say here. If you're operating as a sales rep from a list of canned objection answers, should probably delve a little bit deeper into your role, into what you're doing at for that company, for that product, and really, what's the mindset? What are the psychographics and the demographics of your particular niche and your audience? Who are these leads when they're coming in the door? And so, no, you're absolutely right. So objections are not something to be avoided. They're something to an extent. You want to seek them out. You want to uncover those objections because. And it's more efficient. It's almost a lazy man's way of doing it, because if you know what all their objections are right up front, well, that's going to save you a ton of work, because now you don't have to have the same conversation three times, be on the phone for an hour when it could have only taken 20 minutes, and both of you are just tired of the conversation. And even though they logically may know that, yeah, I'm probably going to buy this, they're just burned on the conversation because they've been talking to this guy for an hour now, and they haven't really gotten any value out of it. And so, yeah, you want to get all those all on the table. Just get them out on the table. Now you know what you're working with. It's the guy that has something hidden behind his back that you got to watch out for. It's the guy that has all his cards on the table that you can really fully go into a confident conversation with.
Gotcha. Now, we're coming up to the end of our allotted time. So what I'd like to do now, if you don't mind, is I know you're working on a project, a book related to the unconscious mind. Can we talk just... give people just a taste of just even the title and a brief synopsis of what it's about and why they should be waiting for it, because I'm waiting for you to get it done myself.
Well, there is the title is sub.
We had a dropout there. Could you say it again?
Yeah, absolutely. Now that I'm going to give the title again, it may sound like it was done on purpose. The working title is Subconscious Conspiracy.
Ah, someone doesn't want us to know this information.
I love that title. Silence me already.
Yeah,
that's funny. No, yeah, it's the without giving away too much, it's not necessarily a. There's two types of conspiracies. There's the one that's intentionally propagated, the one that's done from some kind of black society who's trying to manipulate the world. And I'm not saying that's not the case, but I don't think that's the intended conspiracy. This is an unintentional conspiracy there has been a number of series of events that have kind of built on each other that have led us to a point to where our subconscious is seen in a completely, completely erroneous way. It's the idea of what the subconscious is for most of us is completely wrong. And what this is actually once people, one of my partners, he's had 27,000 clients in a one-on-one setting. Working with them and studying this concept that we're talking about. And so functionally, we have proven, almost empirically, we have proven that the 180 degree turn that we're going to do on people's perceptions of what the subconscious is leads to dramatic change inside your own brain. And that's how we know we're onto something, is because it leads to changes in behavior. That is the one thing, because ultimately, we could rely on testimonials, we could rely on all these things, but the truth is, Ken, anybody who's in marketing long enough knows that people lie, but behaviors don't.
Great. That's a great place for us to end. Ryan Gary, the name to look out for, and I'm really anxiously awaiting the publication of this thing that you're working on. And we're going to have more conversations in the future, but I wanted to introduce everybody to Ryan, and let's go back to the key concept on this call, curiosity. And what did you call it? Structured curiosity?
Functional. Well, there's functional uncertainty, there's functional uncertainty, and then there's authentic curiosity. And authentic curiosity has to come from, someone says, well, how do I have an authentic curiosity? Well, can't I just be falsely curious? Yes, you can be to an extent. That can get the ball rolling. You can fake it till you make it in this regard. Even if you really don't care for the answer, you can still ask it. But somewhere in there, if it doesn't become an authentic curiosity, if it doesn't become that, it's still just a closed-ended question. You're just simply going through the motions. And so it's that authentic curiosity. And a lot of that comes from that functional uncertainty that you can use in specific circumstances to really maximize your ability to see a more comprehensive picture in this moment.
Great. So I'm going to guess that just about everybody, if not everybody, listening to this call is looking for some kind of breakthrough in their lives. Could be minor, could be major, could be personal, could be financial. And I will say, based on my experience and based on what Ryan's saying, and check your own experience too. You don't have to believe either of us. I think the gateway to breakthroughs is curiosity. That's where you're going to get your breakthrough in everything that you're doing, whether it's sales related or operations related or finance related. The golden path is curiosity. And so I'm glad we brought up this seldom discussed yet highly important topic. Ryan Gary, thank you so much for this time. We're going to be doing more of these calls with you in the future, and talk to you later.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, Ken.